We are lucky enough to live, work, and record this podcast on the land of the Kaurna people. We acknowledge their ongoing connection to sea country and the importance of Indigenous knowledge in caring for the ocean. Welcome to The Ocean Pod, a podcast about all things marine science and the ocean. You're joined once again by myself, Dr. Nina Wootton, and my co-host, Professor Bronwyn Galanders. We're both marine scientists from the University of Adelaide with a huge passion for all things ocean. Hi, Bronwyn.
Hi, Nina. In this episode of Ocean Pod, we're diving into one of the most extraordinary places on Earth, the Galapagos Islands, and I've just returned from there. Known as the cradle of evolution, the Galapagos are home to incredible biodiversity, from giant tortoises and marine iguanas to hammerhead sharks and sea lions. But the islands are also facing modern challenges, including tourism, climate change, and conservation pressures. In our chat today, we'll explore why the Galapagos are such a unique natural laboratory, how scientists and communities are working to protect them, and what we can learn from this iconic ecosystem about managing and conserving oceans worldwide. But first, it's time for one of our favourite sections, Tide Talk. Nina, what's caught your attention over the last week?
Well, I've actually just come back from being up in Darwin at a conference. I feel like last time on Tide Talk, I also talked about a conference. I don't really get to go to that many conferences, but there's just been two in short succession of each other. So I was up at the Australian Society of Fish Biology Conference working with, there was about 300 attendees, I think, from all over Australia and New Zealand. We even had a few people from the Pacific Islands there talking about fish, my favourite topic.
That's one of my favourite conferences. It's such an amazing group of people.
Yeah, it was so fun. And I did a bit of promotion for the podcast, so hopefully we have some new people listening in because of that. And it just was such a good week. Like, Darwin is so beautiful and it was such good weather. I kind of felt like I was on holiday. I probably shouldn't say that to my boss, but yeah, it felt very relaxing.
Warm weather's always appealing.
Yeah, exactly. And it's also been very cold in Adelaide, and I feel like I just needed a bit of a break from everything going on down here ocean-wise, so it was nice to get up there. And yeah, honestly, I had the best week. I did a presentation, listened to so many amazing presentations as well, and learnt a lot. I have like a list of notes on my phone of all the things that I now want to go off and think about and have ideas for in other research areas, so conferences are so good for that.
Cool. And Professor Ian Southers gave the K. Radway Allen.
Yes. Ian gave the K. Radway Allen. It was so good. He's so clever.
He's amazing.
And he's a very like humble man. Like, he's just, and he's so welcoming.
Yeah.
I really like him.
Yeah, I've known him for as long as I've been in Australia, really. And he really is amazing, doing some great research through the University of New South Wales.
Yeah, he was lovely. But yeah, there was lots of great people. And I feel like we come together once a year for a week and we all have the best time talking fish. And then you go off and do your research in fish and then you come back again the next year. It was really fun.
Cool.
But what about you, Bronwyn? What's your Tide Talk?
Well, I was just reading the newspaper, online, and I happened to notice an article about glow sticks. And basically this family was cleaning the beach of North Stradbroke Island, and they noticed that by far the most common item that they found were actually glow sticks. And they were imagining somebody having parties somewhere. But it turns out that these glow sticks are actually used in the fishing industry.
Oh, like as a light attractant.
Yeah. So they're used in longline fishing, that's used for catching things like tuna and swordfish and marlin. And they're usually attached to the longline to attract that target species that they're after, because they mimic the light that's given off by prey, for example.
Ah.
And so the fishers attach the glow sticks to attract swordfish, and their use over time has been shown to dramatically increase catches. So that's why they're using them. And the swordfish are obviously at depths and they see this little glow and they come up and they're more likely to take the bait. But these glow sticks are single use.
Oh,
and okay. Yeah. So there's a bit of talk around whether they should be able to use them or whether they should be ones that can be recycled, those sorts of things, because it's only the ones that are lost that are the issue.
So my one thing I know about glow sticks is from when I was like maybe 16 or probably younger actually, maybe about 12, and I was at New Year's parties and we used to like put them on our wrists, and then you could freeze them and then you could reuse them again. But I think it was like one or two cracks. You know how you kind of crack them and then and then you shake it. I do have some good memories of that actually.
Well, but that's probably why the family was imagining it was a party somewhere.
Yeah, party,
you know,
like some kind of
party at the surf club or something.
Yeah, full
like
moon
that.
Parties in Thailand or something, and they've come over. But that's interesting. I actually also read that article, so great minds think alike.
Yeah.
Okay, let's get into today's episode. Today we are zooming out and away from Australia. Finally, I feel like we've been quite Australian focused, but we're going international. We're actually going to almost the other side of the world, literally, from where we are. We are taking our listeners on a journey to a place that's become almost mythical in the world of science, the Galapagos Islands.
They're incredible remote volcanic islands off the coast of Ecuador, quite a way off the coast of Ecuador, in fact, and they're famous for their wildlife and obviously most people know them from their role in inspiring Charles Darwin's theory of evolution. The volcanic activity of the islands, like, is incredible. Still active volcanoes, regularly erupting. They don't necessarily erupt as big spontaneous eruptions. It's more lava
flows.
It's
like kind of like, like rumbling along underneath.
So
they're sometimes called the living laboratory of evolution. And Bronwyn, you've actually just been lucky enough to be away there for a few weeks. I have been so jealous because I think everyone in our group has been so jealous of Bronwyn getting to go to the Galapagos. But tell us, what took you there in the first place?
Yeah, so I've always wanted to go there. And then my colleague, Professor Mike Kingsford from James Cook University, runs a course there. And so he invited me along. So it's he's basically working with the University of San Francisco, Quito, which has a lab there on, is it San Cristobal Island?
Okay.
And so working with them. And so I was interested in going along and checking it out as an option for perhaps us at Adelaide University and to the future in terms of a study tour, just seeing what they're doing.
Amazing.
It
Sign
was amazing.
Me up.
It was amazing. So they spend all their time on San Cristobal Island, but they get to do some diving if they're suitably qualified, otherwise snorkeling, and just see some spectacular underwater sights as well as wildlife on the islands.
Oh, amazing. So they're undergrad students?
A mix of undergrad and master students. They do some lectures and some they have an exam on those lectures towards the end.
Oh, so it's quite intensive still.
And they, it's not just a holiday.
It's not a holiday. It's not like this.
It's definitely a course. And they also go out and collect some data without putting out tape measures or anything like that. So they do some timed counts of, say, fish and various things and then work it up into a project.
Oh, awesome.
And then I think once they get back to Australia, they produce a video and a report and those sorts
of things. Okay, so how many students were there?
There was actually 19 on this trip.
Okay.
So a mix of undergraduate and postgraduate students.
Yeah, wow. Sign me up if we decide to run this at Adelaide Uni. I volunteer. So when you first got there, let's talk a bit about how you get there maybe actually first. So what was the flight time like? I guess what was your first impressions when you arrived?
So the flight time is rather long coming from Adelaide and four flights and 48 hours of travel.
Oh, God.
I know. So I arrived at 10 a.m. in San Cristobal Island, which is where one of the international airports are. You have to fly through Ecuador. So I went through Guayaquil, but some of the flights go through Quito as well.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can either fly into San Cristobal Island, where the airport is really close to the main city, or you can fly into Santa Cruz Island, where you land on this island and have to go across to the main island of Santa Cruz by boat and then go to the other end of the island. So it's much easier travelling into San Cristobal Island. But within a very short time of being there, I was able to fortunately check in straight to my hotel. I went out for a walk with Mike, and rapidly saw marine iguanas, bluefoot boobies, heaps of sea lions.
Oh, so it was just like packed with wildlife.
Yeah.
It's literally what the pictures show.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, you might have to go for a bit of a wander, but pretty much the sea lions are right there in the centre of the city. When I was in on Santa Cruz Island in the main city there, and these cities are very small, I was just watching and the sea lions sitting on the road. So a bit like our ducks crossing the road, we've got to stop for them. There you have to stop for sea lions crossing the road.
That's so funny. Well, we had actually in Adelaide, remember we had a seal on one of our roads like a few months ago, but I think that was displaced. I don't think that's very common. Wow, that's crazy.
This is quite common. And on one of the weekends, just outside the main building of the university there, there's a sea lion on the veranda, and they were saying that they sometimes have to shut the doors so that they don't come inside.
But they're so friendly too, sea lions, the puppies of the ocean.
Yeah, that was part of the cool bit of snorkeling or diving was having them there as well.
Yeah, they're so playful. So you stayed at the same place the whole time?
No, so I jumped in and out a bit. So I got there a bit earlier and went across to Isabella Island, which is where there's quite a lot of volcanic activity. I was there when the tsunami alert from the Russian earthquake came. So we did get evacuated, but largely as a precaution. But what that did, I think, is stir up some of the sediment a bit, because I noticed that the scuba diving or the snorkeling was much clearer pre the tsunami than after it.
Yeah.
But I went across to Isabella Island, which has amazing volcanic activity. You've pretty much got to do tours to see most things. So I managed to go to Sierra Negra volcano and then the Vulcan Chico, which is one of the, you see this big, huge crater. And then I also went on a separate trip to see the old sulfur mines and the current sulfuric or sulfur activity that's there on the volcano.
Wow. Okay.
So that was pretty cool.
Yeah.
And I did go across to Santa Cruz Island just very briefly because I wanted to dive at Gordon Rocks.
Oh, wow.
And that's one of the best dive sites in the world.
I think it's so interesting because I always picture the animals, but obviously the habitat in itself, like just the plants and the lay of the land, are also so unique.
Yeah, I think the volcanic sort of activity and the huge craters that they have that have revegetated, but then there's various different areas you can go in under the ground where you can see some of the craters from the volcanic activity.
Oh, wow. So let's talk about the wildlife now, because that is probably the thing that I imagine being the most standout-ish. It's so iconic, the Galapagos, for all of its animals, and it's like, you know, where evolution, the iconic example of evolution. When I was in undergrad, we talked about the Galapagos, like this is this case study for evolution. What stood out to you the most? I don't want to tell you your favourite animal. Maybe you can do one favourite land animal and one favourite marine animal.
Yeah, so I think lots of people talk about the Galapagos finches, but they're not brightly coloured or anything. I think in terms of the some of the birds, I think it was the boobies.
Yeah, the bluefoot booby.
Well, there's the bluefoot booby, which is amazing because its beak's blue and its feet are blue, obviously. And they do these amazing dances, like together with the female and the male before mating. And then we actually got to see, the time of year I was there, you got to see the fluffy little chicks. They essentially lay their eggs and have the chicks. It's literally on the ground.
Okay. Oh.
And there's not really any nest or anything around them. The thing that you'd note is the guano or the bird poo that's around it. But there's also the redfoot boobies, which look exactly the same as bluefoot boobies virtually,
except
they've got red feet.
And they're different species.
Yes, they nest up in the trees more.
Okay.
And then there's the Nazca boobies as well, which are another sort of booby, and they nest more in the cliffs.
Love the boobies there, don't they?
Yeah, but we got to see all three species at Punta Pit on San Cristobal Island, which was amazing.
That is amazing. Yeah. See, I feel like I'm quickly becoming more of a bird lover. I think we're both of us are fish girlies, but we're into the bird area now, maybe.
I did try to get some good photos of birds, but some of them are easier to take than others.
Yeah, they seem to fly away quite quickly.
And then my favourite marine animal that I saw there was hammerhead sharks. I've always wanted to dive with hammerhead sharks, and so there was a couple of dives there where I saw hammerhead sharks, but people that were snorkeling also saw them. So you don't need to scuba dive to see them necessarily.
Yeah, amazing. And I have seen a video of the hammerhead shark that Bronwyn showed me previous to this, but we'll definitely put some of your photos on the Instagram page so other people can see.
Absolutely.
What you've been looking
and
at.
I think the frustrating thing around, you get these hammerheads that are just really slowly moving nearby and you can see them, and then you get these sea lions coming in and you can see the hammerhead sharks just take off, so they clearly don't like the sea lions.
Yeah, like, it's funny though, because it's not like it would be, that wouldn't be a predator of them at all, but it's just maybe they don't like sharing the space.
Well, and yeah, I'm not sure, but the sea lions, like, they mouth things.
I guess they move, and they're quite playful, and maybe they're just kind of like, it's like the annoying little sister. They just don't want to be around it.
The annoying little sister, yeah, maybe.
So something that I have always thought about with the Galapagos too is how fearless the animals are, and you kind of talked a bit about that with the blue-footed boobies, how they just sort of lay their eggs wherever, and they don't really seem to have a maybe hidden nesting sites or whatever. I wonder if that's because they've evolved without predators and they're sort of unafraid of people, or if it's, is that what's happened?
So there really were no huge predators, like, whereas now this is one of the things that's one of the threats to the Galapagos Island is you've got, like, rats and you've got various different...
Oh, they've got some invasive species coming out.
Yeah, they do. Oh. So some of the invasive species, both plants and animals, and also in the marine environment, are somewhat problematic. But, like, even just the giant tortoises, which are incredibly huge animals.
Oh, you saw them too?
Yeah.
Oh, you really saw everything?
Saw them in the wild, but also then on each of the islands they have areas where they're taking the eggs and growing them up, or more, or trying to protect the habitat where they would normally nest, because you see the rats, cats, dogs, all those sorts of things.
Anything can take,
Yeah.
And when it's such a vulnerable species, I can imagine.
Eating the eggs.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then there's also some ants that are invasive that are damaging eggs as well. So,
I guess, like, when you think about humans on the time scale of evolution and life, like, that they're only really a more recent thing, and all these animals have evolved for such a long time without having these human threats. And now, in relative to, like, the time scale of what they've been around for, it's like, of course it's a threat. They haven't had time to evolve to make up for that human pressure.
Exactly. So they are getting some protection. But just in terms of some of the plants as well, there's these guava trees that are just everywhere, whereas they would never have been there previously.
Yeah, interesting.
But you see now the finches and various birds are using them.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's really a very delicate balance.
Yeah, I can imagine. So the Galapagos are also a UNESCO World Heritage Site and also a marine reserve. Can you tell us a bit more about the conservation side of things? You sort of touched on some of the things they're doing in terms of protecting eggs and that sort of thing just now, but anything else?
Yeah, absolutely. So all of the Galapagos Island is a marine reserve.
Okay, so the whole area?
Pretty much the whole area. It's like 198,000 square kilometres, I think, I saw somewhere. It's one of the largest areas in the world. So it pretty much protects all of the marine environment. There's also, like, so they've got quite strict regulations around tourism and things. There's only a couple of places you can go by yourself. You've pretty much got to go with a guide, which means you have to arrange something.
I mean, that's so awesome.
Restricting activities and those sorts of things. It's also really good because the guides actually know what's there. So when we went snorkeling at one place, I mean, I would never have found the white-tipped reef sharks that were in the cave because I wouldn't have known where they were.
Yeah, they help. The local knowledge is so key in that stuff. They really, they all dive and snorkel and walk around those locations all the time. So,
that's
of course,
right.
You should utilise that information.
That's right. So the marine reserves are a big one. There is some fisheries activities there, but they're quite strictly regulated.
Oh, that's good. Mm. Yeah. Well, that's interesting. I guess that's a good example of how and why we should keep protecting these pristine places to keep them pristine.
Absolutely.
Because without it, you can't really manage that.
The other thing I really noticed in terms of talking about some of the threats is before you even go to the Galapagos, you've got to check in your luggage in mainland Ecuador, and it gets checked. tracked.
Oh, and like a biosecurity.
So you can't take, they don't like, well, you're not meant to take any fruit and vegetables and food, even between islands.
Yeah.
But you're also not meant to take plastic bottles there.
Oh.
So I did notice, like, compared to some of the places I've been, the beaches are relatively clean.
Yeah.
There is still some litter, but relatively clean compared to most places. Yeah, but I did see them, the person before me checking in had some plastic water bottles and they took them off them.
Oh, wow.
So, and everywhere you stay, there's water fountains or water, filtered water that you can use because you can't drink the water.
Yeah, so they've got the kind of a water setup.
Yeah.
That's good.
So I just took my, like, metal water bottles and just filled them up each day.
Oh, that's so much better.
Yeah, yeah.
And I love this. This is one of my big passions at the moment, like, take the choice away from the consumer, because if you don't have the option, of course you're going to use what they provide you for. Like, if you're not allowed to do it, then...
Well, there's still... You can still buy water bottles, like bottles of water, but there's...
You can't,
like,
bring it on.
You don't have to. So the whole time I was there, I didn't need to buy any water.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
So I guess in terms of research, because you were obviously there, I mean, it sounds like you did some sort of small, not small, but some university-based research stuff. But in terms of bigger picture research, what's happening at the Galapagos in the research space?
So there's the Charles Darwin Research Station that's doing quite a lot on Santa Cruz Island.
Uh-huh.
Now, I went there, but I didn't actually go into the research part of that. They have like an interpretive centre there, and that has around what's happening
like
there.
Like a museum kind of.
But there's also the University of San Francisco, Quito, on San Cristobal Island, and that's got a research station there with the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. And so they're doing quite a lot there around marine mammals. Also, I was there a bit before the study tour, and there was a PhD student, Juan Manuel, from James Cook Uni that was collecting samples, looking at trophic relationships and those sorts of things. So I did some diving with them to help. I held the catch bag while they collected the samples.
Oh, well, you're helping.
yeah. But, so you obviously need two people to dive.
Yeah.
But there was also a American research vessel that had come in that was going to do some oceanographic research, like they had some cool equipment on board.
Yeah, I can imagine.
So there's bits of research there's quite a lot of research that's happening there.
That's going. I mean, it's such a unique spot, I guess. That's very cool. I guess for scientists, it's almost like a dream destination. It's definitely a dream destination of mine. Big bucket list item.
Yeah.
Do you think that being there gave you a new perspective on your work back here in Australia?
Well, probably one of the things, perhaps not a new perspective on my work back here in Australia, but one of the things that struck me was how similar the habitat was to the New South Wales coastline.
Interesting.
Yeah, so it's right on the equator, but because there's cold currents coming from the south and upwelling areas, the water temperature is actually cooler than you might expect for a tropical location. And so you have these pencil urchins that graze barrens habitats, similar to the urchin graze barrens habitats that you see off the New South Wales coast.
Yeah.
So that was kind of one
thing. I do have
a
question about the urchins, actually, because I did see that in one of your photos. And I know that a lot of those urchin grazed barrens over in New South Wales, they're like quite invasive and they're trying to get rid of them. But
so not really.
Not in New South Wales. That's maybe more Victoria.
So with climate, with the East Australian current, they're moving further south.
It's more the
ones in Tasmania.
Yeah.
That they've moved into Tasmania. So then they graze out the kelp forest habitats that might have other...
Oh, so it's more south than that they're a problem. Mm. But I wonder if that will happen in the Galapagos. Maybe they'll start to move more.
Oh, no, so it's a natural cycle. It's a natural thing. So even in New South Wales, you sometimes end northern New Zealand, where you get the urchins and you get the kelp forests, and it's kind of like this habitat cycling sort of model.
Oh, so it kind of... Okay, so it's not necessarily a bad thing. That's good to know. I always thought it was... I think I've seen a few talks at things where they're like, they're pests and they're trying to kill them.
They are definitely further south in Tasmania because they didn't used to occur there.
Yeah, you don't want to have things that are... Yeah, that makes sense. It's very interesting. So if one of our listeners is lucky enough to go one day to the Galapagos, what would be your top tip? Is there something they should absolutely not miss out?
I would say diving or snorkeling at Kicker Rock or diving at Gordon Rocks.
Okay.
Both of them are places where you can see hammerhead sharks and other species. Gordon Rocks often has a strong current, and so you've got to be a more experienced diver. I dived first at Kicker Rock and saw the hammerheads, so that was one of my favourites. And the rock there, it goes up miles out, well, not miles, but, you know, metres, huge amount of metres out of the water is a sheer cliff.
Oh,
it's like that underwater as well. So it's really quite amazing.
Oh, so it's like a big rock face, like a vertical rock face.
Yeah. Okay. But then Gordon Rock was also pretty amazing, but there was quite a strong current there and you kind of had to hang on and just look for things.
Sometimes I like that. You're just kind of like riding the wave and like you just hold on and then things come to you.
I think, well, that's what it was like. I think because I was so focused on big things, you didn't necessarily see the small things.
Yeah, how cool.
But, yeah, the diving, spectacular. Or the snorkeling if you're not a diver.
Yeah, for sure. It sounds so unforgettable. You know, I have one. Hey, I have not many regrets in my life, but the one regret I do have is when in 2021 my sister went to, no, actually 2022, sorry, she got invited to go over to the Galapagos. She's a journalist.
Oh, yes.
And she wrote a whole, like quite a few articles, actually, and she writes for the Financial Review, but it was their kind of, you know, tourism, travel out magazine thing. And she got to take someone and she called me up and I just started my job at the uni with you and Melissa.
And you didn't go.
I thought, and now I know you so well, like it would not have mattered. But at the time I was like, oh my God, it's a new job. Like I don't have that long a contract. I just want to make sure I do really well and not just run off to the Galapagos for 3 weeks. But it was fully paid for, flights, accommodation. Oh. A cruise around, and then my brother went instead.
I can't believe you turned it down.
I know, big regrets. See, honestly, regret nothing. I regret that.
But it's definitely worth going for a reasonable amount of time. I realise it's quite expensive because, and it's also US dollars, but it takes 48 hours to get there and 48 hours to get back. So that's like 2 days each way.
Exactly,
so you don't exactly want to go for 5 or 6 days.
No, God, no. And also that's like, it's expensive to get there. Yeah. So you want to make the most of it.
That's right.
That's perfect. So I guess, I love this episode, actually. This is a really good catch-up for you and I, Bronwyn, because I feel like we haven't had a chance to talk about it properly, and now I've heard all about it. I feel like the last, like, week, well, I've only been back for 3 days, but the last little period, whenever we've had meetings with students, they only want to talk about your trip. And then I'm like, oh, we have to talk about your work, guys. So at least now they can, we can say, listen to the podcast.
Yeah. Yeah,
it's a good
place. And I will put together some photos and perhaps a video for the lab group to show the lab group as well, because it really is spectacular.
I'll put them on the on our Instagram. Yeah. So if you don't follow our Instagram, it's just @OceanPod, and follow it to get our photos. That's our best way to give you some visual exploration of what we're talking about. I think that brings us to an end of this then. The Galapagos is definitely on my bucket list, and it is even more so now. I am going to make it happen somehow.
Yeah, absolutely.
Study tour, Bronwyn.
Mm-hmm.
Let me go. If you've got questions, cool ocean facts or stories to share, hit us up on social media or email. You can find our contacts in the show notes. We'd love to hear from you. And if you enjoyed this episode, make sure to follow Ocean Pod wherever you listen and leave us a review. It really helps more ocean lovers find us. Music written and performed by Seamus Nicholas. Graphic design by Rhiannon Van Eck. This podcast is produced by us, Nina and Bronwyn, supported by the School of Biological Sciences at the University of Adelaide.